Well, I hope Trump just takes the money printer out of the Federal Reserve and sticks it in the Oval Office. And then it's just, and then we're just at the whim of Donald Trump, like, print money, give him a big red button, right? Not for nuclear weapons, just to print money.
Probably a bad day for a lot of folks on Wall Street and maybe a handful of shitcoiners who have been betting against Bitcoin and in favor of their favorite shitcoin for a while.
Bitcoin is not meant to be traded. It's meant to be held, spent, and used as a unit of account. That's it. You know, like if people understood the value of this thing, no one would be caught dead treating it so flippantly.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Rick and Tony is back. Gentlemen, let's jump into the news here. All righty. So let's just watch this video from Trump and then we'll talk about it.
So on Jerome Powell, you said that the termination of Jerome Powell cannot come fast enough. He says he won't leave even if you ask him to.
Oh, he'll leave. If I ask him to, he'll be out of there. But I don't think he's doing the job. He's too late. Always too late. A little slow. And I'm not happy with him. I let him know it. And if I want him out, he'll be out of there real fast, believe me.
Alrighty, so relatively diplomatic. But then he comes out with this fiery post on Truth Social. He says, preemptive cuts in interest rates are being called for by many, with energy costs way down, food prices, including Biden's egg disaster, substantially lower, and many other things trending down. There is virtually no inflation. With these costs trending so nicely downward, just what I predicted they would do, there can be almost no inflation. But there can be a slowing of the economy unless Mr. Too Late, a major loser, lowers interest rates now. Europe has already lowered 7 times. Powell has always been too late, except when it came to the election period when he lowered in order to help sleepy Joe Biden, later Kamala, get elected. How did that work out? So, Trump does not like Jerome Powell, and it is unclear to me at this point if or how he could oust Jerome Powell, what the mechanism is behind that. I think Powell's term ends maybe next year or something like that. I don't pay too much attention to these clowns except for to report on them arguing with each other. Rick, why don't you take this one first? What are your thoughts on Trump and Powell and everything going on?
Oh, I mean, you know, say what you want about Trump. He's the most entertaining president you've ever had by far. I mean, you know, you've had some interesting characters up there, but this guy is something else. Look, I, the interesting thing here for me is that, you know, the Federal Reserve, as I understand it anyway, is not a government department, right? It's like a privately owned central bank. So I'm curious to know how much authority Trump has to, you know, apply pressure to Jerome Powell. Can he fire him? Can't he fire him? For me, the jury's out. I'm no expert, right? And it seems that everyone online is arguing whether Trump actually has the authority to get rid of him or not. And I have no idea. But what I do find interesting about his Truth Social post in particular is he's asking for preemptive cuts in interest rates because he has predicted that things are going to go so well. And it's like, okay, so, you know, he's saying everything that I've done is going to work out so well that we can preemptively cut rates now because I've already sorted it. Trust me, guys, it's all going to be gravy. So that raises an eyebrow immediately. You know, he's talking about everything's going down, down, down. And he says, so therefore there can be almost no inflation, which if you're a Bitcoiner, you already know is again, total nonsense because inflation is directly, you know, it's the expansion of the money supply. So that's continuing to happen. And so to say that there's no inflation just isn't accurate or true. But, you know, Trump's not alone in that. Every politician and every banker and every economist equates inflation to prices of things going up incorrectly. And it's one way of creating this smokescreen over the fiat system and the fact that it's actually money printing that drives all the prices up. And then brilliant. I mean, I love the way they just called him a major loser or what, you know, in his funny little voice. And then calls him too late, except when he's supporting Sleepy Joe and Kamala. And, you know, maybe he has a point there. Maybe the Federal Reserve has political interests and political leanings that you know, make it lean left and lean on the Democrat side. You know, maybe that's true. So, yeah, some big fight's going to happen, right? I mean, I don't know. If you're a really crazy Bitcoiner, if you're insanely bullish, you could maybe spin this into a narrative. And I'm sure some people will. That what Trump's going to do is destroy the Federal Reserve and put America on a Bitcoin standard and all this. Well, I think that's overly optimistic. And people who start posting about that in the coming weeks as this fight, I think, grows larger, they're selling some serious hopium. So who knows what happens with this, but it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be lots of fireworks. And the best seats in the house are when you're sitting in self-custody with your Bitcoin, not really worried who's going to win. You're just you're a casual observer, just enjoying the show. So, yeah, who knows? Who knows what that means?
My understanding, and again, none of us really understand this, I don't think. My understanding is that there's some mechanism by which Trump could oust him, or he could be ousted. I'm not really sure who does the ousting, for like effectively just like gross negligence. Like the fact that he's been wrong and late and inflation's transitory and then it wasn't. You could make a compelling case, I suspect, that he is not fit for the job, and there's maybe that. I feel like in the meantime, this is a convenient scapegoat for Trump. You know, like if things don't get better, he can keep pointing the finger at, you know, the Federal Reserve and at Jerome Powell specifically, and then he can, you know, kind of do what he wants to do after Jerome Powell leaves, appoint whoever he wants. Tony, what's your thought? You think Jerome Powell's going to make it through the rest of his term?
I don't know, man, but tell me what you think, Mr. President. I mean, do you really like Jerome Powell? Please don't be shy with your thoughts. Love him or hate him, this guy is like a, you know, it's a 28-year-old guy stuck in an 80-year-old body, right? I mean, Donald Trump, if you watch him on a daily basis, there's never a boring moment, eh? Whether you agree with him or not, that's besides the point. What he's doing now with the Federal Reserve is a very, very interesting take, though, because, I mean, he definitely doesn't like them. Their performance has been, you know, horrific, you know, for the longest time. And he's, I guess, the first one who's not shy about just, you know, outing them publicly. It's not be like behind closed doors anymore. That, in my opinion, destroys a lot of the power of the Federal Reserve. You know, when you mock someone in public, they no longer become that big bad threat, that big bad wolf that, you know, no one should mention. They become this like circus almost. The problem with that, though, is that these guys fund the military, don't they? So, I mean, you're sort of... It's a sensitive topic. I mean, all jokes aside, it's still a sensitive topic. How he's going to get rid of him is yet to be seen. But then again, nothing would surprise me since these guys, they change the rules every 15 minutes. I mean, if you look back, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, you think you have a law, a judicial system, you know, that's fixed one way. And then, you know, from one day to the next, you know, somebody scribbles something on a piece of paper and boom, you know, there's something new has changed and now it's in a different way. And so it depends, you know, on, you know, where the narratives lie. That's how the law aligns itself. So with this, I don't know how it's going to play out, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see if he can do it. One thing, though, that you can't dismiss is that Donald Trump has followed through with almost everything he said he would, right? And he does have a pretty good track record. So if he's making these claims, I wouldn't put it past him to somehow find a way to achieve that goal. And if he ends the Fed, well, I'm sure he's not going to be the only one who's going to be happy. There's a lot of people that will not miss it, you know, considering all the damage and destruction that they've caused and been responsible for Lord knows how long. So yeah, keep the popcorn warm, man. It's going to be fun.
I could see Powell being pressured out before the end of his term. But at the end of the day, I think what people need to remember is that the Fed, as long as it exists, can still print money. It can still serve as buyer of last resort of government debt. And it's the single most communistic attribute of our economy, because any one person is going to get the money supply wrong to the extent that you even believe we need an inflationary or deflationary money supply. that someone can pull the levers and control how much, how many dollars exist in the economy. And so for me, I think it's, you know, like, do I think Powell's good? No, obviously not. He's been dead wrong about everything. Do I think the next guy will be notably better? Probably not. It's a hell of a hard job to decide how much money to print to when in such a complex environment. And that's the whole point. Like that's exactly why the central banking sucks, is because it just doesn't work. You can't have one person, or even, you know, 11 or 9 or however many board members of the Fed there are, making those sorts of determinations for such a complicated system. So that's kind of my take.
Well, I hope Trump just takes the money printer out of the Federal Reserve and sticks it in the Oval Office. And then we're just at the whim of Donald Trump, like, print money, give him a big red button, right? Not for nuclear weapons, just to print money. And let's just get this show over with, right? Let's print this dollar to oblivion. We're all waiting for it to die. It's going to die eventually. Just print it. Let's go. Like, let's get rid of this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. All righty. Up next. Okay, so the World Economic Forum founder and chairman Klaus Schwab is resigning, effective immediately. And Klaus Schwab looks and sounds like exactly the supervillain you would expect at the World Economic Forum. But beyond that, the guy who has taken over in the interim, former CEO of Nestle, also looks exactly like the supervillain you would expect at a place like the World Economic Forum. I don't know much about this guy, except for that he was at Nestle, which I'm sure you guys will have some comments on, but it doesn't, just aesthetically, it doesn't look like we've improved in my mind. Tony, why don't you take this one?
Oh no, Klaus is leaving. Habibi, what's going on? How come? Where were you going? Man, this day couldn't come fast enough. This fucking cancer in the world has finally gone. But what's curious is about his timing, right? Like, I mean, a lot of things happened at the same time. Well, you had the Pope who died. Now he resigned. And then, you know, it seems like the House of Cards is just, you know, disintegrating at the same time. Coincidentally, you know, I don't know, like, I don't know what to make of it, but there's something going on here that connects the dots between all of them. The fact that this Nestle guy is coming to take his place, I don't know much about him, except I like his chocolate, you know, so that's about as far as it goes when it comes to the Nestle guy. But you're right, aesthetically, he's not very promising, you know. Maybe that's just a bad picture that they caught of him, you know, and you are using it, you know, to illustrate a point with Klaus Schwab. But this whole globalist movement is finally over. You know, I think they overstepped their wishful thinking, you know, that they're going to take over the world, that then we're all, you know, a bunch of idiots that are just going to play along. But they underestimated the power of good in this world and how many freedom fighters are still out there. And, you know, if you try to push us a little too hard, we're going to come back and we're going to destroy you. And I think this happened after COVID fell apart. That was like their point of no return. And they thought they had it, despite, you know, the extremities and the craziness that they put us through. They still lost, because there was enough people that saw what was going on and pushed back even stronger and finally put this whole thing, you know, out of its misery. And now you've got a guy like Trump who is anti-globalist completely. So even though I'm not a fan of any politician, when you have, you know, some of them on your team, like, you know, like the enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of thing, that's what seems to be happening now. They hate him. He hates them. He's got a lot of power and leverage now and their resources to do, you know, what he wants to do, which is put them out of business completely. He was right during his last term when he was quoted saying, "They're not coming after me, they're coming after you." Nobody really understood what he was referring to, but, you know, it was abundantly clear that he was spot on and that was his warning, you know, COVID and everything else that came right after. So I personally am not going to miss Klaus Schwab. You know, I hope this guy goes through the worst of the worst of suffering in the way he did the world. So people like him, I have no empathy for. In fact, if I could have my own version of how he ends, that would, you know, be very interesting. But we can't talk about this on national YouTube.
Rick, what do you think? My thought is, yes, I'm glad Klaus Schwab is gone. Who's going to take over the World Economic Forum that shares any of my values? I mean, you know, there's just, I'm not optimistic that we're going to be anything more than maybe incrementally better. So, Rick, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I mean, most Bitcoiners, myself included, are not big fans of the World Economic Forum for quite obvious reasons, right? This was the group of people that were putting out propaganda saying stuff like, you will own nothing and be happy. And essentially, they're pretty much a communist organization, right? They think that they should be controlling your lives, how much meat you can eat, how many plane trips you can take. But they're also complete hypocrites because, you know, all of these world leaders fly into Davos on private jets every year. You know, the amount of hookers that have to fly into Davos every year to keep these deranged people happy. You know, these are not moral or righteous people, yet they feel that they have moral superiority over the rest of the world and get to dictate what they do. So, you know, look, I'm as happy as anyone to see the back of Klaus Schwab. But I'm also sort of cognizant of the fact that this organization still exists, right? Even if he's not the head anymore. I mean, sometimes they'll swap these characters out just because they know that their face isn't palatable anymore. You know, and Klaus Schwab has been all over social media. There's loads of memes about him. Maybe it's just a change of the guard, just so people forget exactly what was, you know, how Klaus was connected to COVID and that sort of thing. They'll go quiet for a bit and launch with their new leader. But just to underline how dangerous this organization is, because I think a lot of people probably underestimate them, is there was a time when Klaus Schwab did an interview in 2017, and he was actually at, I think, Harvard giving this talk. This is a direct quote that he gave. He said, "What we're very proud of now is the young generation like Prime Minister Trudeau, President of Argentina, and so on, so that we penetrate the cabinets." And he goes on to say that even half of Trudeau's cabinet or more came from the Young Global Leaders Program run by the World Economic Forum. That is wild. Like, think of that. So more than 50% of a cabinet of a ruling party in a country like Canada was indirectly controlled by someone like Klaus Schwab. Now, these people talk all day about defending democracy, but that isn't democracy, is it? That's an external power wielding influence over a sovereign nation. And we all saw, you know, Tony, you mentioned COVID. We also saw what happened in Canada with all those trucker protests and lockdowns and shutting people's bank accounts. And a lot of that stems from these globalist centers like the World Economic Forum, right? So look, I definitely won't miss Klaus Schwab, but I'm also particularly wary of this new guy because they're just going to be just as evil. And to underline that, right, Nestle is one of the most evil companies in the world. They are frequently boycotted in the UK, particularly unpopular here, largely because one of the things they got caught doing in the UK was selling horse meat and calling it beef. I mean, I've got a whole list on Grok of all the crazy stuff these guys get into. Like, they sucked up a load of water in California and bottled it and sold it to you despite you being in the middle of a drought. They add sugar to a child formula and tried to push that in places like Africa, and it led to like starvation because mothers stopped breastfeeding. I mean, Nestle is the kind of company you might want to boycott because almost all of their products, someone has suffered in the creation of them. So I think the World Economic Forum will keep being the World Economic Forum, but I also think Tony's right that the pendulum appears to be swinging in the other direction. They seem to be losing influence, losing power. And I think Trump's election was a big part of that, actually, because he doesn't really subscribe to these organizations. And I wonder if cutting a lot of this US aid and all these other little funding channels, I wonder if that's actually nipped a bit of their funding in the bud. Because who was funding Davos? I don't know, but I'm sure that's a murky world. And I'm sure Biden was help him write a few checks before Trump came in and stopped it.
That's a very interesting point you made about Nestle. I had no idea they were that corrupt. I mean, as far as I knew, it's like I just like their chocolate. But beyond that, I never gave them, you know, 5 minutes of attention beyond those milk chocolate bars. But yeah, if all that's true, absolutely boycott that garbage. But look, all these organizations now, I think will be completely rendered irrelevant for the simple fact, to go back, you know, to what we were mentioning earlier, is the money has changed, right? Or is in the progress of changing. These guys can no longer fund themselves when there's an exit to the money that is used. You know, Bitcoin in self-custody now exists. You can't remove it. And so it's not everywhere yet, but every day more are paying attention to it. And before you know it, the fiat system will be completely obsolete or like debased to a point of like it doesn't really matter. And where are these guys going to fund themselves to exist? It's not going to happen anymore. And so you can just, you know, study about them or read about them. Once upon a time that we, you know, we lived in a time of, sexually abused Looney Tunes. You know, that's who these people are. They prey on these kids, turn them into brainwashed politicians, and that's how you have the stupidity that we witnessed in the last 4 or 5 years. These are not normal people. So, but you know, no money, no candy. And there's enough people now that have zero tolerance for that type of bullshit. And so as soon as it, you know, like puts its head out again, I suspect that, you know, there's going to be a big fucking hammer smashing it out of existence very quickly this time around.
Yeah, I'd love to hear anyone listening in the comments what your thoughts are on Klaus Schwab. And I mean, I think most people aren't going to like Klaus Schwab, but what do you think about this transition here? And are you optimistic that this could be a turning point? Maybe they get better leadership. I tend to agree with you, Rick, obviously. One sort of aside on all of this, and this is like, you know, as I've gone further down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, it's changed a lot of the way that I live because of these sorts of things. So like, I wasn't familiar with the details, some of the details you mentioned, Rick, but I knew some of the murmurings of Nestle. And like, it's the reason like I haven't eaten like dessert in a couple of years. It's like, it's my protest against, you know, all these organizations who are doing incredible harm to the world. It's the reason I took my entire family off of health insurance. We moved to Crowd Health, you know, to align with people who believe, you know, have similar beliefs and, you know, philosophies that we do. And it's the reason I Bitcoin. It's like, that's my opt out of all of the nonsense. And like, the more people we can get making these small incremental decisions to just cut this, move to this, move to something better. That's why when we talk about like the strategic reserve, I'm unexcited, because I think a grassroots movement of individuals and families making these decisions on their own to just completely eradicate any need for these big organizations is really the best way we can move into the world that we want. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. Alrighty, not last up. We got two more. So number one, let's listen to this video. Tom Lee's talking about Bitcoin catching up to gold.
Bitcoin up almost 3.5% percent as well. For more on this, I'm already talking to you and I haven't introduced you. Let's bring in Tom Lee, head of research at Fundstrat, chief investment officer at Fundstrat Capital, as well as a CNBC contributor. And I don't remember whether it was you or Pump when we were talking about Bitcoin sort of stuck under 85,000 with gold going up every day. And it was either you or Pump that said Bitcoin usually follows a couple of months later, but has a much bigger move.
That was probably Pump.
Yeah, he's pretty bullish.
Yes.
Have you noticed anything similar? I mean, that's a pretty big move. And, you know, in the past, gold's been leaving in the past near term, 2 months, 3 months, whatever, this year maybe. We have seen gold leave Bitcoin in the dust and go to new highs. Looks like it'll do 4,000 easily, right? Do you think Bitcoin eventually catches some of the same money, the same bid?
Yeah, I think Bitcoin earlier this year may have been struggling with some of the deleveraging that was happening for institutional investors.
Just selling what they could.
Yeah, selling what they could, and I think that suppressed Bitcoin, especially over weekends. But now that deleveraging is done, I think that Bitcoin is going to catch up to gold, and you know, Bitcoin's old high was over 110,000. So I think there is a lot of room to catch up as a sort of non-dollar asset.
As for the equity markets, you think stocks are attractive, but uncertainty is still the name of the game, and it's going to persist. So you think the high in the VIX, what did you say that was on April 7th, that holds?
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard to match that level of fear again. So I think we're probably past peak uncertainty. I mean, even with this Fed controversy, but I don't know if we're past maximum pain. You know, I think that there's still risk that the economic consequences are going to cause markets to be hesitant, but it's going to be hard to match that fear again. So I think a structural low did take place.
Alrighty, so we are not quants. We don't do TA, but there has seemed to be a sort of a trend where gold does one thing, Bitcoin catches up a little bit later, and then vastly outperforms, in at least in dollar terms. I think it's sort of irrelevant because I think Bitcoin outperforms in every other aspect of its monetary properties. But Tony, I'll let you take this one first. What do you you think he's onto something here, that we're going to see something, some big moves here in the near future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all this volatility, a lot of it is caused by these leveraged morons that trade Bitcoin all day long. The problem is that a lot of these people that have access to a lot of money don't understand anything, and they're treating Bitcoin as a risk-on asset, or like just like another stock that, you know, they're playing around with. I never feel sorry when these guys get completely wiped out, because, you know, they're detrimental to the advancement of Bitcoin, you know, in the world. So whenever I see or read news about, you know, so-and-so certain amount, billions of dollars getting wiped out because of this, you know, this is bullish news, because the less opportunities these guys have to do this, the better it is for everyone going forward. The volatility is going to end. You know, I mean, people at some point are going to learn their lessons, or they're simply going to run out of money, right? So now that gold is surging, like, because we discussed this earlier, most people understand gold more than Bitcoin. I think it simply comes down to this. But, you know, given enough time, and that time is not that long, you're going to start realizing that the better return on investment is not gold. It's Bitcoin. And we do live in the digital age, and, you know, there's a lot more benefits to Bitcoin than gold. So just wait it out, man. I mean, all these things, I guess, are part of the transition. It's all expected. It's frustrating for, you know, people like us that understand, you know, what Bitcoin is, you know, its value and what have you, that you have to, you know, put up with, you know, what you see on the market. So just give it time. It'll pass.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tony. And I would add that the ROI that I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think the ROI that you're referring to, because so many people get bogged down into the dollar denominated exchange rate, the ROI is purchasing power and freedom. It's not that you earn more dollars if you invest in Bitcoin, once you begin to understand this properly. So keep that in mind as you're stacking sats, taking into self-custody like you should. You do it right, you're not getting more dollars at the end of the day. You're obtaining freedom, and you're obtaining greater degrees of purchasing power. Rick, what's your thought here?
Yeah, just price predictions, isn't it? More and more price predictions. And one thing I've come to realize after 10 years is the narrative always comes after the price. And what I mean by that is I didn't hear any of these people saying, well, what I predict is that the gold price is going to run really, really hard while Bitcoin remains flat. But don't worry, because then it will catch up later. So the gold price rips, and then they have an opinion on it. So, you know, you get used to the fact that most of these narratives, most of the talking heads, they are not proactive, they're reactive to what's going on in the market. So if you're looking to these people for predictions, you got to realize, well, they're always just chasing the price. They're very rarely indicating what will happen next. And the next thing I'd say is, okay, so they're bullish on Bitcoin. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, myself included, Tony, yourself, Michael, right? We're all bullish on Bitcoin. But what we're not spending all of our time trying to do is justify or explain away every single price movement that happens, and every single correlation between Bitcoin and stocks, or Bitcoin and the dollar, or Bitcoin and gold, because you can genuinely spend your entire life doing that, right? The game never ends. So you will constantly be just going around this news cycle trying to work out what just happened and why, rather than getting to like the core principles that you and Tony alluded to, which is, you know, which is the better money, which is the better long-term bet. So, you know, the next thing is everybody, you know, the whole timeline now is talking about, okay, so gold is outperforming Bitcoin. Well, yes, that's true if you cherry pick the right time frames. But if you pull up the gold BTC chart and look back over the last 10 years, then gold gets absolutely hammered by Bitcoin. So I guess I'm more interested in the long-term trend than what's happened in the last 2 or 3 months. Because if you have a short-term perspective, you're likely to get chopped to pieces as gold is ripped. Oh, crap, right, sell my Bitcoin, chase after gold. And then just as you buy the gold, everybody suddenly realizes they wanted Bitcoin instead and they dump their gold. And you're just always going to be a step behind this. You know, what you need to do to get ahead of this is think, well, which one is going to outperform in the next 5 or 10 years? And look, my personal opinion on that is it's going to be Bitcoin. And that would follow the trend of the last 10 years. I'm not trying to give financial advice. What I'm trying to encourage people to do is maybe just extend their time frames a little bit. And I know a lot of Bitcoiners like rag on gold and, you know, and I agree with them on a lot of points that Bitcoin has many advantages over gold, right? It's really easy to send over borders. You don't have to melt it to divide it up, like all of these good things. But, you know, if you force me to choose between gold and cash, then I'm going to choose gold. So, you know, I don't hate it as a method. I understand the logic behind someone with a lot of money saying, oh, God, I can't be sitting in dollars, and they don't understand Bitcoin. It makes sense that they run towards gold because they just don't have this knowledge yet. But what's encouraging about the gold price ripping is that it suggests that even the people who don't understand Bitcoin do understand the problem of their money inflating away and do understand the need for them to run towards more scarce and, more scarce, more solid, more tangible assets, right? So they're actually only one step away from sort of saying, well, hang on, you know, maybe the Bitcoiners have a point and nobody's asking you to take all of your gold and sell all of it and suddenly put all of your faith into Bitcoin. And certainly not if you've only read, you know, if you've only spent a week reading about it, because if you do that, you'll never have the conviction anyway. And if there's a 20% drop, you'll have such a bad time. You'll puke all the Bitcoin, right? But try and maybe reallocate based on your level of understanding. So, you know, you spend 20 hours studying Bitcoin and you start to understand its use case and you say, okay, well, maybe I should allocate 2 or 3% of my portfolio to it. Then you go a little bit further down the rabbit hole. You start understanding, you know, more likely, you know, what its trajectory is and what the final outcome could be and what the potential upside is. And you adjust accordingly, right? So look, if you bought gold, you've done better than dollars. But I think you might want to consider getting some exposure to Bitcoin as well, because I think that's going to be the fastest horse. And I might not be right, but I think ultimately in 10, 15, 20 years time, gold will actually lose its monetary premium to Bitcoin. And in that scenario, you definitely don't want to be sitting in all gold. So if you're an investor and you're looking at all this stuff, if you're at 0% Bitcoin and you haven't read about it, that's the thing you need to change.
Yeah. I think the only exception to that rule would be if you are in the jewelry making business or some sort of industrial manufacturing capacity that requires gold. All righty, last one for you. So this just actually happened right before we hit record. $3.36 billion in shorts will get liquidated if Bitcoin hits 90K. It did right now. We're sitting at just over 90K. So probably a bad day for a lot of folks on Wall Street and maybe a handful of shitcoiners who have been betting against Bitcoin and in favor of their favorite shitcoin for a while. Tony, why don't you
rest in pieces, losers. Whenever these guys get wrecked, man, open up the champagne and celebrate. Like I said earlier, these donkeys are bad news for the space in general, and they're going to keep playing these games. One day it's the shorts, the next day it's the longs, you know, and it goes back and forth and back and forth until they're both out of money. And then you start seeing, you know, the trend upwards for Bitcoin. The issue with this is that it scares away those that understand nothing. They come in and they see this up one day, down the next, up the 1 week, down another week, and they're like, what the hell's going on? And they try to time it, and they go start and, you know, studying all this trade analysis bullshit, trying to guess where the next, you know, uptick and downtick is going to be, and ultimately they lose their money. So all of this is good news. You know, the more people get wrecked and stop playing, or rather are unable to play these shitty games,
the better it is for Bitcoin, the better it is for the world. Bitcoin is not meant to be traded. It's meant to be held, spent, and used as a unit of account. That's it. You know, like if people understood the value of this thing, no one would be caught dead treating it so flippantly. But because most people understand nothing yet, that's why it's so easy to make these, you know, ridiculous moves with something that's so scarce and so valuable. So I'm happy. No tears shed on my end. But, you know, I'm sure those who lost their funds are probably cursing and yelling. But, you know, good.
Yeah, it'll be a beautiful day when the TradFi games just end. You know, there's just so much of this and it distracts people. It confuses people. It adds to the volatility. And it adds no value to society. You know, it's everyone just trying to get rich quick. Rick, what's your take?
Man, gamblers get wrecked, right? Like, you know, if you bet on the horses, I think you're probably going to lose your money at some point. If you bet on the football, I think the same. If you go into the casino and play roulette all day, my money is on the fact you'll come out of the casino with less than you went in with. Sometimes you'll hit the money, but then you'll probably get so excited you'll give it all back again anyway because you think you're going to hit it again. And I think the problem with traders and all this technical analysis is they get to do that thing, right? I play a bit of golf, right? And you can always tell who's a bad golfer because he shows up and he'll have all the gear, all the expensive clubs, right? He'll be dressed just like Tiger Woods. But we all say you've got all the gear, but no idea. And I look at traders in the same way, right? Because they've got 17 monitors on their wall and all these complicated looking charts, and they're doing all this TA and drawing all these lines and talking about Fibonacci bends and signals this, signals that. And I just think you're just like the guy who rocks up at the golf club with all your fancy gear on. And then I see you swing and you just completely miss the ball. So I think these people, unfortunately, it's almost more insidious than gambling on sports because they manage to do the mental gymnastics to convince themselves that they're not gambling, that this is an actual job. Like it's work that they're doing. It's not work. You're just gambling. And gambling often ends the same way. So I have some sympathy because I think some people do get tricked into it by influencers who try and position it as a skill that you can learn rather than just being honest about we're just gambling here. And look, just like poker players, you are going to have a small percentage of society that are very good at it and are profitable. But I mean, look at the statistics for things like options trading. I think it's something like 97% of people lose their money. And that's options, right? You move into Bitcoin and it can move 20% in a day. I would imagine that number's even worse. So just stop gambling. You're getting like a compound annual growth rate of 50%. You greedy buggers, just buy some Bitcoin and sit on your hands. What's wrong with you? So that's my take on it. Yeah, gamblers get wrecked. Stop gambling.
That's well said. Stop gambling. Take your Bitcoin into self-custody. Stay humble, stack sats. We at The Bitcoin Way can help you do that the right way. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We'd love to chat with you, explain how we help train you to do it properly and securely. You'll sleep in peace at night, finally. And we also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option, everything you need for your self-sovereignty needs. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you're enjoying the channel, do us a favor, drop us a comment, like, subscribe to the channel, share it with someone, anything you can to feed the algorithm. We would really appreciate it. Help more people find us and what we're talking about. And gentlemen, I think that is all we have for today. I will look forward to catching up again later this week.
Thank you, Michael. It's been great as usual.
Cheers,
thanks,
guys.
Thanks, Michael.